Hey, this is Michael from Modern Musician, and before we start the show, I wanted to let you know that right now, I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Specifically, we're looking for artists that have at least one song professionally recorded. It doesn't have to be, you know, Beyoncé-level production, but it just needs to be something that you feel proud of and you're ready to promote. We're looking for artists who are really just poised for growth and are ready to go all in on their music. And yeah, there's this saying that when the student's ready, the mentor appears. And so that's you. If you're truly ready for it, then I want to invite you to apply for a free coaching call with our team. The goal is to launch an automated system that allows you to build a loyal and engaged fan base so you can make a sustainable income with your music online without having to sell your soul to social media or post 20 times a day on TikTok. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application and share one of your songs. I'm looking forward to checking out your music, and now let's start the show.
AI scares me. It's building off of what our artists have done. It's learning from everything we have done, plagiarizing in many cases. If I were to tell AI, give me something that sounds like a New Orleans brass band outside while there's a parade going, it would figure something out. And it would be something that would take away from what we have spent hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker. And let's get into it. Yeah! All right, I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Mark Samuels. So Mark, I'm going to give you a quick intro. Mark founded the Grammy-winning Basin Street Records. They represent iconic New Orleans artists like Rebirth Brass Band, Kermit Ruffins, and John Cleary. They've got over 25 years of global acclaim. And they've won multiple Lifetime Achievement Awards, named the 20 most influential people in Louisiana by Offbeat Magazine. And so today I'm excited to connect with them just to hear his experience, his experience of 27 plus years of running a label and dealing with the ups and downs. And Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure.
Awesome. So, yeah, I'd say let's just dive right into it. So clearly, you have a lot of experience kind of watching the different waves of the music industry come and go. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, what are some of the unique challenges and problems that you see artists struggling with right now in today's music industry? And I'm curious how those compare to like the problems you've seen of the past. Like, are they the same, different?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, I think, thank you very much, Michael, for having me on. I started the label as a night and weekend hobby in 1997. And initially, it was designed to just put out an album by Kermit Ruffins. I had initially been asked to just invest some money in a recording. And I was looking for something new to do. I have a lot of experience in other industries, natural gas, oil and natural gas, and in computer consulting. And I was just looking for something that was more fun, interesting. And it was a night and weekend hobby. I was still in the oil and gas business. So that was 1997. And if you look at the sales charts, physical sales back in 1997, 1998, those were probably the two of the top 3 years ever in physical sales of music. So we started out making, first recording a live album at Tipitina's in New Orleans. That was in November 1997. We planned for it. We put flyers on telephone poles. We went to college. We had five universities in New Orleans, so we went to all the universities, and we ended up selling out the show at Tipitina's, 800 people, for this live recording. As it got closer, it was like, oh, shoot, what if it rains that day and there's heavy rain and we're listening and trying to get a good recording? So as it turned out, we made a really great record. At that time, Kermit was already like New Orleans Entertainer of the Year and was looking for a new record label and gave us this opportunity as a fledgling label to put out a record by him. At that time, in January, we manufactured cassettes and CDs. We sold those through dozens of local outlets, whether it was coffee shops, record stores, you know, places like Barnes & Noble, Borders, Warehouse Music, Circuit City, Best Buy, wherever, and so many other great record stores. Well, those products today, we are probably down to 7 good outlets for New Orleans, in New Orleans, to sell physical product. Instead of checking on them every week or two, we're checking on them every month or two. You know, it's just a completely different thing now. Physical sales were at their all-time high back in 1999, 2000. We've watched all the numerous things, whether it was initially things like big box retailers taking over, using their Tuesdays for new releases to encourage people to come in and buy the latest Britney Spears CD and a washing machine at the same time, using music as a loss leader. And then we watched Napster, the initial Napster of people just burning CDs for friends. Now, we're in a niche market. We have a niche label. We're blues, R&B, soul, funk, rock, jazz. We don't have a lot of people doing that, but it affected all of the great record stores. And today, you don't have Virgin Records, Tower Records, Borders, Warehouse. I mean, those are gone. So it's been a lot to adjust to over the years. And over 27 years, it's been many, many hurdles that we've had to deal with from the music side. And then we've had plenty of them here in New Orleans and around the world from a life side that have been hurdles that we've had to overcome.
Awesome. I suppose for 27 years in the making, you kind of have to have quite a few hurdles, and you have to keep going over the hurdles as well just to be around 27 years later.
That's right. To give you an example, in today, obviously, I can say, you know, go to our website. We've got a brand new record by Kermit. That initial record, actually, that first record that we released in February 1998. Kermit Ruffin's The Barbecue Swingers Live. That one, this past 2 weeks ago, I picked up a brand new version of it on vinyl. It was never released on vinyl initially. We waited until our 20th anniversary to release it on vinyl. And now we have another release of it, and it's on a silver translucent vinyl. And we give people who are our fans of the music label, of the artists themselves, we give them these products. We try to stay viable, have product to sell. But we also know that somebody can go in and find all of Kermit Ruffin's catalog, not just the 15 projects we've done with him, but the 3 he did with Justice Records before that as a solo artist, and all of the stuff he did with the Rebirth Brass Band. And they can listen to any song at any time. And they can do it from their phone, wherever they are, standing wherever they are. I don't have to worry about whether they go to a record store to buy it and listen to it and for us to get paid. So that has its advantages and disadvantages. Also, from an artist standpoint, obviously the recording process is a whole lot easier today than it was when we got started. I mean, that was a very inexpensive record back then to make because it was a live recording. We hired an audio engineer who brought out a mobile soundboard, made a record, mixed it in a few days. It was a live cut. We recorded the whole album. There was 2 shows that night, 2 sets. Everybody could stay the whole night. But we basically recorded the same music, first set and second set. And it turned out that almost everything we used was the first set. And very little tweaking, very little overdubbing, a little bit here and there to correct a cracked note or two. But it's got this great live vibe, and it was a record that probably cost about $8,000 to make. And over the years, we have other records where we had 59 musicians and spent weeks in Cuba, Jamaica, Trinidad, Haiti, Dominican Republic, recording music with Los Hombres Calientes. We have 5 records by them. Those were $60,000, $80,000 recordings. So today, there's plenty of opportunities for an artist to make a recording. Probably you want to pay for good musicians to be on it with you, probably. And you want to have sound engineers who know what they're doing, or you'll spend a lot more time at it not knowing what you're doing. But you can make recordings now for a lot less. And I encourage people to do that for as little as they have to make a great quality recording, to be have it planned out. Because it's a whole lot easier to spend money than it is to make money. And that's a lesson that I've learned over the years. There's a whole lot of ego things you can do. Putting a billboard on Canal Street in New Orleans, for example, it's not going to draw a lot of people to sell. You're just not going to, the $2,000, $3,000 a month is probably not going to come back in music sales. It might come back in selling tickets to your show and the music sales and getting the opportunity from other festivals and whatnot around the world. If you put up a billboard during the New Orleans Jazz Festival and there's 2 weeks of music going on, maybe you'll get a bang for the buck. But those are some of the lessons, some of the things we used to do that we no longer do. We used to put artists on tour buses and pay for a tour bus for 2-3 weeks a month and go do shows and pay tour support. Those aren't things we can afford to do these days. We have to look for smart ways to promote the artists.
That makes sense. Yeah, I really like that quote. You know, it's a lot easier to spend money than it is to make money. It kind of reminds me of just the concept of it's easier to break things than it is to build them. You know, just because like it doesn't take that much energy or like effort to like break it. Like it's pretty fun. It's fun to like, you know, break things, but actually building it and putting it together and kind of thinking through the process and you know, orchestrating this like takes a lot more energy and effort. It's good to be aware of. I'm curious what your perspective is on some of the emerging technologies of today. Like at the time of recording this, AI is a big one. And seems to be revolutionizing a lot of different aspects, both the business side, but also the generative music side. And you talked about how easy it is to create high quality music now. How much easier could it be than just having an idea for, I want a song about this, and then it creates a fully produced song. It's not quite there yet, but it's pretty dang close. What's your perspective on all the stuff that's happening right now?
It scares me a lot. Look, the artists on our record label, Kermit Ruffin's been playing trumpet and singing since he was 16 years old on street corners in the French Quarter. We have artists like Irvin Mayfield, went to the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, studied the horn, got mentored by Wynton Marsalis, puts effort into his craft. He's a trumpet player, but he's also a producer. And now he's a guitar player, and he's studied. Dr. Michael White has performed with everybody from Wynton Marsalis to Marianne Faithfull to Paul Simon, a student of clarinet, a student of New Orleans jazz, a student of humanity. He's a Louisiana humanist a year, several years ago. That education, that practice, that drive, that's kind of missing. So it's already just with samples and being able to operate your keyboard and you can create music these days. It's not what hundreds or thousands of hours of practice of an instrument is about. Our label is about roots music. It's about people who have studied and performed on keyboards and pianos and saxophones and trumpets and learned that how to play and music theory. Computers have made music theory less important to create music, but it's not what I listen to. I don't listen to a whole lot of that. And everybody's got their, what most people listen to is whatever is shoved down their throat, primarily by the conglomerates of radio stations, of major corporations who have hundreds of radio stations around the country who own all of the TV and whether it's and all of the film studios. It's whatever gets pushed down the throat. And it can be anything. If you hear it enough, you will start to dig it. I go work out at Hot Works in a sauna almost every day, and they push some music in there. And even though I've said, I can't stand this music that I'm hearing every day, now I'm singing along to this stuff. It will grow on you. It gets forced in. And I prefer to know and hear a band that's performing together, that's practiced together, and individually have worked on their music. AI scares me. It's building off of what our artists have done. It's learning from everything we have done, plagiarizing in many cases. If I were to tell AI, give me something that sounds like a New Orleans brass band outside while there's a parade going on, it would figure something out. And it would be something that would take away from what we have spent hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars making. And there will be nobody for me to go after and say, hey, you're stealing my copyrights. You know, so it scares me. I mean, I can create that today. I can go in and ask for a song that is about snow in New Orleans, because we just had a tremendous snowfall. And I can have at least a 10-second or a 15-second version of something really poppy, really hit-making, posted and spread out all over Spotify and Apple Music and Sirius XM and everywhere. I could have it up there in minutes. But it's being created from what artists over time have been working their butts to create.
Thank you for sharing that. That was a very honest answer. It's wild. It's wild. And what I'm hearing you say is that it scares you because, you know, it's really building off of this training data source of all of the music that's come before it that many artists and labels have invested hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars into creating, you know, this asset. And now, you know, these tools are able to use that and then create something new that absolutely is going to divert attention away from human, you know, artists that are able to create it. And so one thing that scares you about it is seeing those opportunities going more to like the computer versus going to the traditional roots of artists.
Look, we get calls from music supervisors. We've got a Louis Armstrong track in here. We don't know if we can clear it. Do you have something that sounds like sounds like this to put in a film or a TV show or something? And, you know, generally, yeah, we have Kermit Ruffin sounds. He's got that feel in his music. Michael White has that Louis Armstrong feel in much of his music. These guys are all that you asked them who the most influential person in the world to them is. It's probably Louis Armstrong. Well, I do have something created that was inspired. You know, we have things that are certainly inspired by Louis Armstrong that are original compositions. Because these guys admired, but a music supervisor today could say, we have this piece, here it is. Give me something that sounds like this. Create something, AI, create something that sounds like this. It's going to be pieces of Louis Armstrong. It's going to be pieces of Louis Armstrong and Wynton Marsalis and all kinds of people out there who are creating music, and it's going to replace for free because the film studio will choose to use that free piece instead of licensing the replacement from us for $10,000. They'll go create something quickly and pay somebody to create a quick 15-second piece to go in this spot of this film or TV show. You know, hopefully they don't. Hopefully the person who's working on creating things like that also appreciates the fact that there are people down the line that could help that are also trying not to be replaced by AI.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear where you're coming from. And, you know, I find this fascinating about like AI generative, like music and just in general, and the comparison between kind of the traditional path of how we create music, like the point that you made about, you know, someone reaches out to you and says, we want to hear a song inspired by Louis Armstrong. Then as a human, like our brain kind of pulls these pieces of identity that we are influenced by that made us us. And maybe if we're writing for film, we might even literally kind of try to emulate, to kind of create something along those lines. And then it seems like one of the challenging things about AI generative works, and I know there's people who are much smarter than I am legally that are sort of debating this right now, but it sounds like one of the challenges that has come up against saying this is copywritten, like plagiarized material, is that technically they're creating like original content that was trained based off, it was like influenced or inspired by it, maybe in a similar way to what we might say, like, well, we're creating original material inspired or influenced by, but because it's like original content, it at least throws a bit more of a curveball in terms of saying, well, like you absolutely can't do that because it's plagiarized. It's a little bit more of like a gray area because it's like, well, it's creating, you know, stuff that's new, but you can tell it's like inspired, but you kind of say the same thing about like human generative stuff. I'm curious, with your background in, you said computer consulting?
Yes.
What's your thoughts about like computers in general? And like, in, you know, there's argument like computers, you know, when computers themselves came about, they replaced a lot of jobs and labor. And also the internet, you know, has sort of, you know, as new technology comes out, you know, 80% of people used to farm, you know, kind of use tools. And now, you know, it's less than what, 15% or maybe probably less than that. But I'm curious on your perspective on where things, as a computer consultant, how do you integrate those two viewpoints with, you know, as it relates specifically to this field of music?
Look, when I worked for the company that's now known as Accenture, we install systems, things like the UPS package tracking system. I was on my first client was the New Jersey Department of Labor. They had been doing things the same way for 75 years, and we put in a computer system for them to do many of the things that their Department of Labor did. But I was also involved out in California with Pac Bell and put in a system to bill for 900 and 976 phone calls, which were, I don't know that I should say it on this cast or not, but no, we were known as the phone billing system, the phone people, because that was the primary type of calls that were coming through on 900 and 976 calls. But that technology kept changing and we're learning this flow. So that's the company I worked for. We also were, though, involved in some of the very first mortgage-backed securities, the things that led to the collapse of the financial industry years ago. We put in systems that allowed them to monitor analyze pools of mortgages to create mortgage-backed securities. Computers allowed them. And we're talking now in mid-80s. Didn't use a lot of computers when I was in college. I didn't see a computer, a PC, until I was a senior in college. And I didn't do any programming. Computers have done wonders for this industry. Computers, our first records were recorded on 2-inch tape. And that was obviously a huge barrier to entry for somebody who was trying to do any recording back in when we started in 1998. If you had to go record on 2-inch tape, that those kind of machines and whatnot were rather expensive. If you had a DAT, maybe back then there was DAT machines, you can record to DAT. But now, computer, hard drives, the cost of storage have come down so much that for, you know, a couple of grand, you can have all the storage and a great system designed just for your recording. So those aspects, but now, seriously, from the machine that I'm using right now, which is only maybe this little 2-in-1 device, right? I can use it as an iPad or a PC. This device can also do all the things I need to do to record, upload to, we use The Orchard, which is to distribute our music around the world to all the different platforms. So literally, I can get on the dashboard, upload a song, upload the artwork, and in a matter of about 4 days, that would be available all over the world. Now, that wasn't something I could do. I couldn't do that. I had to manufacture CDs, wait for them to come in for weeks, distribute them. If it was a case of someone like the defunct Borders, I would get them here in New Orleans. I'd have to ship them to their central warehouse. They would ship them off to their stores. I'd have to send them way more than they needed in order to just get enough shelf space. If I wanted more shelf space, I had to pay for the shelf space. I mean, right now, with the process I just described, what we use computers for now, and what I've been able to use them for quite a bit of the 27 years, be able to get the product out there, whether it's for downloads or whether it's for streaming, this frees me up to be able to work from almost anywhere, whether I'm in the car waiting for my son to get out of swim practice or whether I take a trip over to Florida or something, I can work from almost anywhere. And I don't have to worry without a Borders out there that has 300 stores that I would have to ship 1,500 CDs to, to have five at each one. So there was enough there that it would be visible and be, or perhaps pay for a listening station or pay to be at eye levels on the Hitler displays. Computers is what's made it possible to do it this way. And it's a much different feeling for me, because I do still enjoy selling a physical product. I love wrapping up, getting a web order for John Cleary. We took his record that we did in 2002 that everybody loves, and we put that on vinyl for the first time just a year or two ago. But I love wrapping something like that up and shipping it to Australia, knowing that it's going around the world. But even computers there, the money comes in from, I have the money in 2 days in our account. Someone puts their Visa number in on our website, and the money's there in 2 days. That wasn't available without having, in the very beginning of our company, we didn't have that availability.
So cool. I love conversations like this, because it's just so interesting hearing how much things have changed. And I guess 27 years is a long time. And I guess in relative terms, it's like a very short time, but things have changed a lot. It kind of just makes me think, like, 27 years from now, man.
I have children who are from 35 to 15. That little 15-year difference, 20-year difference between the oldest and the youngest, about a 15-year difference between my previous youngest and the new youngest, those are different generations. They, one has grown up with a device in his hands. He was a little delayed. We waited, my wife and I waited till he was in high school before he had a true iPhone type of device, specifically an iPhone, a hand-me-down. But many of his friends had devices in their hands starting in third or fourth grade, accessing videos and songs. He's got his Spotify account. He listens to stuff that he's got access to, great stuff here, but he chooses to listen to whatever it is. when he's playing video games, they're being exposed to music in a different way. It's hard to get them to even watch a football game or anything else. It's a total different generation than my children, who are 15, 20 years old. So 15 years from now, 27 years from now, who knows? I hope I'm still around to see it. I don't think I'm going to still own this record label at that time.
Oh, man, who knows? The latest book that I've read, talking about this subject of technology and the future, is the book The Singularity is Near by Ray Kurzweil. And he predicted the internet before the internet happened, and kind of like AI before it happened. And the main point of the book is that information technology is on an exponential curve. And so it's changing faster and faster. And we don't understand exponentials very well, but like when they hit, there's this like straight up asymptote. And one of the things that he predicts is longevity escape velocity, where I forget the exact year that he predicted. I think probably like 5 or 10 years from now, he predicted that longevity advancements, how I think right now we get back roughly like 0.2 years for every year that passes. So it's not enough to like kind of catch us up, but at a point where advances in something like nanotechnology could, reverse decay like from the inside out, maybe in the next 5 to 10 years. So it's a pretty far out idea, but I would love to have a conversation 27 years from today, Mark, and reflect on this moment and kind of see where things are at.
That's one of the reasons I really appreciate being able to document some things on when phone calls and video opportunities. I was talking about the hurdles over a lifetime in this, when you realize like last week, everything was shut down in New Orleans for a week. We had what I hope was a once in a lifetime snow event in New Orleans. I don't ever have to see that much snow again in New Orleans. I've got a trip planned in a few months to Canada to go ski, and I'm happy to see snow there. But I live in New Orleans because I don't really want to be exposed to it all the time. But just that was a really cool week, though, of not being able to go anywhere. School was all shut down. I didn't have to get up at 6:30 to get my son off to school. And just got to have a couple of days of being outside, knowing that I couldn't go visit any retailers. I couldn't go to the post office was shut down. Just a few days shutting everything down, walking around outside in a foot of snow. And I hope that people begin to long for those kinds of opportunities where they are not always wired in, because it is a whole lot healthier. And as I've gotten older, I made a plan this year to leave town the weekend before Jazz Fest. Not something I would have done years ago. But through my maturity and age, I can leave town. But some of it is technology. Some of it is the fact that I know that if there's something I need to do, plan on that week before, that I can get somebody to do it here for me. I have good staff, small staff, but great staff. And I recognize also that there's things to do besides what it is you think is important at that time. There are other more important things to do. And it's like putting your phone down and talking to your kid every chance you get, or spending the time with, I unfortunately lost my wife. I've been married now for 16 more years, but I lost my first wife when the children were really young. And I recognize that, being able to put down your phone and spend the time visiting is also an important thing. So those life lessons, I feel very fortunate that I've had a life that included craziness, like the levees breaking during Hurricane Katrina, or a week of being shut down because of a foot of snow, or the BP oil spill, or COVID. It's not that I want any of those things to ever happen again, and it would have been fine if they didn't happen in the first place, but those are the things that you grow from.
So good. Well, I'm grateful that I get to have conversations like this and learn from experience, of some of those life lessons that, I prefer as much as possible to learn from other people's lessons than, having to learn the hard way myself. So very grateful, Mark, for you taking the time to be here and to share, some of your perspective, kind of where you've come from, where things are now. And I feel like this is an interesting conversation, illustrating both the benefits of technology, but also the things that are risks or things to be aware of. And it's not all, it's not all positive things. I tend to I love technology. I grew up with the computer. I geek out on AI. So it's easy for me to not fully take off my blinders and really kind of sit with the realities of what this technology can do. So I always appreciate the opportunity to have conversations like this. And Mark, for anyone that's listening or watching this right now who is interested in connecting more with you or learning more about the record label, where would you recommend they go to take next steps?
I encourage people, if they want to ask me any questions, to text or email me, mark@basinstreetrecords.com. Happy to answer questions. Probably not going to listen to anybody's package of, I'm not looking for new artists. It's rare that I'll listen to anything when I'm not looking for something new to do, new project. So I would not just send me a unsolicited package of music. But questions, I'm always happy to have other people not make the mistakes I've made over the years. And I at the top of that list, as I had said earlier, is being very careful about where you spend money. I do have I have $2 million invested in this label. It's important whether it was my money, whether it's my money or someone else's money. These days, I don't have great advice on how to spend it, where it's most effective, other than to say, be very careful about how it's spent. But also, make sure that the stuff that you put out there is what you want to have out there for a lifetime. I would be proud for any of our projects to be picked up years from now and listened to in their entirety. I would be even more happy if it was picked up right now and listened to in its entirety, because that will help us as a label and our artists and their families. I encourage people to explore our catalog at basinstreetrecords.com. You'll find links to our YouTube page. There's a sampler. You can listen to a song from every album in our catalog. Our artists have won. Four of our artists are Grammy Award winners. We have Billboard Award winners. We have, just to rattle them off, we've got people like John Cleary, who played with Bonnie Raitt for a number of years, Taj Mahal, Eric Clapp, Jeff Beck, Tom Jones. He played with all those guys. And we have the Rebirth Brass Band, who won our first Grammy for a project that we did. We have other artists who have won Grammys for other records. We have an artist named Kevin Gulledge, who just got a Blues Music Award for Best Emerging Artists Album. It's an album that he put out after he did one for us. So there's a lot of great music out there on our label to explore. Email me and friend us on Facebook and Instagram and Blue Sky and Twitter. And you'll also discover why I'm irritated with Elon Musk and things like that. If you go to some of these other spots to find what I'm talking about, things that I like to talk about.
Amazing. Awesome. So like always, we'll put the links in the show notes for easy access. And Mark, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah! Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable. And if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and we've helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.